is Matthew Wayne Selznick, and this is Sonatotum, episode 66. Hello, my friends. Sonatotum is all about making stuff, mostly writing, finding success as we each define it for ourselves, and staying healthy and sane in the process. Each episode has a rotating focus, either making stuff or finding success or staying healthy and sane. But before that, I like to review what I've accomplished or learned or discovered or faced in terms of challenges and victories and defeats and failures since I last spoke to you here in the lush and lavish studios of MWS Media in Southern California. This first week of the new year, 2023, I did two big things. I got some more words written on Shadow of the Outsider, the follow-up to my last novel, Light of the Outsider, and the novelette, The Perfumed Air at Kawanantag Bay. These are fantasy books in my Shaper's World story world. Yeah, I got a little bit further along in the second scene, the second beat, whatever you want to call it, however you want to define it. In the novel, the focus of the scene was pretty much all in one of the three protagonists' heads as they walk from their home into the village. But it's important because it deals with and reveals lots of aspects of their personality, a little bit of history, and it foreshadows the conflict to come, which is all a result of the character's personality and their kind of, I don't want to give too much away just yet, but, you know, their flaws. That's at the core, well, should be, I think, at the core of any piece of fiction is the character's flaws, their internal issues should have a direct effect on the plot, the external issues in the story. Plus, it's nice to kind of get in this person's head and continue to get to know them. Even though I have a pretty good idea of what makes them tick, it's good to hear their internal voice. So, did that. Also wrote a pretty extensive, I think 1,200 word article in my wiki over there at mattselznick.com on, well, everything. The article's title is The Big Picture, and it is nothing less than kind of me spelling out the unified cosmology behind every work of fiction I have ever written or ever will write. And I have kind of, you know, I've worked it out in my head and I've written notes on this, and I kind of have it. I mean, it's in my creative DNA, and it has been for a long, long time. But every now and again, I try to write it out in long form and refine the ideas. And that's what this was. And it helps. It helps me to kind of see things from this not even 10,000 foot view, 10 billion light year view? way big picture. It helps me to kind of remind myself of what's behind everything. And it inspires me, frankly, because when you have such a broad canvas, there's so much room for painting details. You know, it's kind of like if you look at a big painting, a literal painting, and you zero in on just one square inch to see how the artist has filled in just those little pieces, the details of the work. It's exciting to remember and to remind myself that there is, practically speaking, an infinite number of stories that could be told in my collection of story worlds. And, you know, I'm showing my early childhood influences of Michael Moorcock and Stephen King and Marvel Comics and other creators, Edgar Rice Burroughs, who had many stories, but one big story world or worlds. Robert Heinlein is another one. H.P. Lovecraft, Ursula K. Le Guin, Julian May. I mean, I love, you know, not just the idea of a series of novels that are all connected, but how an entire body of work can be connected and have interconnective tissue and an overarching theme. I don't know. Makes me feel good. So I wrote that all out and put it up on the wiki. And both those things, the new wiki article and the words that I wrote on Shadow of the Outsider, I shared with my multiversalists, my member patrons, my community of readers and fellow writers, because that's what I do. When people become members of the member community, they not only get access to the wiki, but they get everything that I create either right after I make it in the form that I made it in, or, you know, shortly thereafter. I share everything as much as feasibly possible, with the exception of some just kind of boring busy work. Like I was doing some pre-recording for the podcast for the entire year. And no, I did not share every single rough audio file of that process with my patrons. Speaking of my patrons, and you can find out more about how to become a member patron and get access to all this cool stuff and more toward the end of the show. But for now, I want to thank the multiversalists who are part of the community. Thank you so much for your ongoing patronage, Chuck Anderson, Amy Bowen, J.C. Hutchins, and Ted Leonhardt. And again, if you're interested in joining that small but mighty cohort of awesome people, then you'll hear more about that toward the end of the show. So that's what I did this week. Those were the main creative things. The other thing was sort of creative adjacent. I mentioned last episode in Sonatotum 65 that I was going to begin soliciting interview guests for the show in anticipation of the point later in 2023 when interviews return to Sonatotum. When that happens, I want to make sure that that I have some conversations in the can, as they say. There will be interviews on every other episode of Sonatotum when we reach 30 members in the patron community. And so, in anticipation of that, I want to start inviting people. I am a member of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Association, and I got permission to solicit the members to see if anybody would like to engage in conversation with me on the show here. And I'll be reaching out to some other writer communities that I'm a part of. So during the week, I created a few things on my website that would make it easy to facilitate people submitting their requests to be on the show, vetting them and all of that. So, gosh, other than the usual mentoring and bear poking and thinking out loud that I do in various member groups and fora on the web and on social media, that was my creative week. A decent amount of words written, so I ain't knocking it. I'm pretty satisfied with this first week of the year. So the focus of this episode is on making stuff, and as I like to say, mostly writing. There has been a lot of chatter in the online world and even in traditional media about artificial intelligence and how it is, some would say, encroaching, some would say enhancing creative endeavors. Last year, a visual text-to-image artificial intelligence platform became rather popular, and I guess still is. I myself played around with one of these text-to-image platforms, Stable Diffusion, that you can actually install on your own computer if you have a graphics card that can handle it, which I happily do. But the one that's really making a lot of noise in the last month or so is ChatGPT. It's basically a chatbot on a website, right? OpenAI.com, that you can type and have a conversation with, and it will answer questions, come up with responses to prompts, and it is, on the surface, kind of clever, or it seems to be, of course. It's not really clever. And both of these AIs, Stable Diffusion and its cousins and ChatGPT, they take very simple or very complex text prompts and return what seems to be original new content. And let's focus on ChatGPT, because I think most of us are writers, or we would like to be authors. And the thing going on is that ChatGPT can write blog posts. It can write articles. It can write outlines for scripts. It can write software. And some writers, some creators are concerned for a few different reasons. The first concern, of course, is that, oh, we won't need human writers anymore. Anybody can say, hey, ChatGPT, write me a 2,000-word article on this subject, and it'll just pop it out, and there you'll go, and you can publish it. In fact, on Medium, I've seen people writing articles saying, hey, I just made $100 with an article that I wrote, that I had ChatGPT write for me. Among artists with the text-to-image software, there's a couple of complaints. Number one is that it'll put regular human painters and digital artists out of work. And number two, these text-to-image platforms like Stable Diffusion train on, by train, I mean they learn from, they gather their raw materials from existing intellectual property. They scour the internet and they look at images and they categorize those images like, okay, this image seems to have a cat in it. This image seems to have a lamppost. You know, those things that you train when you check these boxes that have crosswalks in them, when you need to do a I am a human test on a website. We've all done those, right? Those are training these kinds of things. So the concern there, of course, is that when you put in a text prompt and it creates an image, it is pretty much just kind of taking a big refrigerator full of artistic ingredients from actual artists and stirring them all up in a soup to create something new and different. If a human did that, it might be considered plagiarism. If a human did that, it might simply be considered a derivative work. Like Andy Warhol painting a painting of a Campbell's soup can. It might be considered trademark infringement. I don't know. We're going to talk about that a little bit. With ChatGPT, which takes a text prompt and, quote, chats, unquote, back at you, the answer or a response. For example, you could say, hey, please write me a 500-word article on the merits of warm milk before bed, right? And it will do it. It will write a sort of neutral-voiced, seemingly authoritative article on the subject. You could even tell it, hey, please make me a WordPress plugin that does XYZ. And it will shoot you back some code. But here's the thing. First of all, ChatGPT is stupid, okay? It might seem like it's writing this very interesting response back. It might seem like it's coming up with ideas out of thin air. It's not. It has scoured the internet, and it's taken all this text information that it found on the internet, on the World Wide Web mostly, and that's its refrigerator full of ingredients. So it's remixing. It's not creating. It's remixing. And because its store of content is so deep and wide, I mean, it might not seem obvious. You wouldn't be able to literally take a sentence from something that ChatGPT writes and put it in the internet and find the source, right? It's not as straightforward as that. It extrapolates from its sources, but it only knows what it's found off of the World Wide Web. And it only knows what it's found off of the World Wide Web up to 2021. It doesn't have a live connection to the internet. It can't go out there and find things for you in real time. And so it's not, very often, it's not giving accurate information. Also, because of its limited resources, it frequently just makes stuff up and presents it in a way that sounds truthy. You know, it might create a quote from a person that doesn't exist as a way to back up information that it gives you on a particular topic. So I've played with all of these tools. You know, I'm a writer. I'm very interested in this kind of stuff. And so one thing I thought was, all right, let's try this one instance of ChatGPT where supposedly you can give it a couple of sentences, fiction, nonfiction, whatever, and then ask it to write the next X number of sentences. And so I tried that with a very basic sort of fictional prompt. And it quickly becomes nonsense. You know, this is definitely not the sort of thing that it is going to write a good, coherent story. I thought, well, what if I give it something with a very well-defined range of criteria? And I thought, well, why don't we try the Lester Dent pulp fiction storytelling method, which is very concise. I mean, there's easily defined, and I'll put a link in the show notes over there at mattselznick.com for this episode 66 of Sonatotum. There's a popular breakdown of a Lester Dent story kind of formula. Lester Dent is the guy who did Doc Savage. Lester Dent has this formula, how to write a 6,000 word pulp thriller. And he goes through it. First 1,500 words, this needs to happen. Second 1,500 words, this needs to happen. Third, this. Fourth, that. And there are, I mean, it's very spelled out. It is a formula. So I kept it simple. At first, I just asked ChatGPT, create an outline for a pulp fiction short story using the Lester Dent formula. And the first thing it did was tell me who Lester Dent was. And then it proceeded to write a very generic sort of roadmap for any fiction. So it showed me that it did not know the actual Lester Dent formula. And then it gave me this pretty usable synopsis for a jewelry heist from this museum. Okay. And yeah, I could take that outline and create a story. But here's what's interesting. When I tried to get it to give me more details, for example, it said a prestigious museum in New York City, and the theft was supposed to be of this diamond. So I said, well, which museum? And it responded with, well, you know, it could be any, there are many prestigious museums in New York City. I said, all right, well, which museum in New York City would be most likely to display or store the diamond that would be stolen? And it kind of refused to answer. It kept hemming and hawing. And now I'm giving it, you know, I'm anthropomorphizing here, but of course it wasn't hemming and hawing. It just did not know how to answer because it doesn't have the data. I found that interesting. Now, what I'm going to try next with ChatGPT is I'm going to tell it the actual ingredients of a Lester Dent short story. And, you know, it remembers from, you know, your conversation, your chat conversation. So I can give it that information. And then I want to see if I can say, all right, ChatGPT, using the information I just gave you, use that formula to give me a Pulp Fiction outline. And I want to see what it'll do. But here's my point to all of this. First of all, I wanted to let you know that I had used it, and these are the shortcomings that I see. As it exists now, ChatGPT is unreliable, inaccurate, very limited, and about the best thing it's for is to make you think you're talking to an artificial intelligence. At this point, there is no threat to writers, okay? There just isn't, especially fiction writers. As far as using it as a research tool, first of all, it doesn't know anything later than 2021. And it will tell you straight up, I might be giving you information that is not correct, because it's trained to be a chatbot, not to be an infinite fount of knowledge. You have better luck getting accurate information from Wikipedia or from just searching for something on Google yourself, right? About the plagiarism thing, a few episodes back, in an episode about how to fix Amazon and its search functions, I suggested that Amazon be permitted to scan and absorb the text of every single book in its catalog, and to use that raw data to create a much more flexible, non-hierarchical taxonomy of information. Basically, so that there wouldn't be so much emphasis or dependency upon genre and categories. Go back and listen to the episode. I'll put a link in the show notes. Anyway, that would, of course, be something very similar to what ChatGPT has done with a good portion of the World Wide Web. And, of course, there are copyright and trademark issues with that. And I think this is more of a concern with visual artists. I read just this morning that an artist was banned from a Reddit channel because they did not believe that his original work of art, or their original work of art, was not created by an AI. They went so far, the moderators of this Reddit subreddit channel went so far as to say, you need to change your style because no one is going to believe that it's not created by an AI. Okay, well... Oh, and by the way, the moderators of this Reddit channel held fast to their decision, even though there is verifiable evidence that this artist, who works with a team of two other artists in stages on projects that they get paid money for, commissioned, that every stage of the process was created by a human. The Reddit moderators still refuse to believe it. So that's something that popped up. I think that's just crazy, first of all. I can understand why visual artists are concerned on a number of fronts. Seth Godin, the marketer, author, book publisher, blogger, he wrote an article in the last week or so, a very brief blog post, as all his blog posts are, basically brushing all this controversy under the rug and saying, listen, art has always been about building from other people's work and derivatives, and art begets art, begets art, begets art. And look, that is true, but AI art, well, first of all, it all has a look, right? Whether you like it or not, it has a style. And it has imperfections, for sure. Teeth, ears, hands, arms, legs. They get pretty fucked up sometimes. The AI creating these works of art doesn't understand anatomy. It only understands the pieces of the millions of works of art that it's looked at. It's stupid. It's not really intelligent, folks. That's the other thing to keep in mind, right? But there are legitimate actual real human artists out there who recognize their works being used in these image generation platforms. And of course, they're not compensated for it. And that's a problem. They're not given attribution. That's a problem. The other area is Apple, right? They just announced that they are allowing AI narrators for audiobooks on their platform. So they have four different voices, I think, or two now, and they're two for fiction and two for nonfiction that will basically text to audio. They will read, quotes around read, a book and create an audiobook out of that. So, you know, imagine, this is very simplified, but imagine Siri just narrating a book for you. So I am going to go on record here to say that I will never, ever, 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 ever have an AI generated voice, quote, read, unquote, my works and make audiobooks out of those. And because it's just not ready for prime time, folks. It just doesn't sound right. You need a human reading an audiobook, especially a fiction audiobook. You know, it might work with a nonfiction book. I don't know. To me, yeah, I'm never going to do it. Now, I can see the value, especially for accessibility, you know, for folks who are visually impaired. Look, if the only way they can get, especially a nonfiction book, is by hearing it, and the only way it's available to hear is with an artificial intelligence reading it, you know, I can't really knock that. But personally, for my own works, I'm never going to do it. And if Apple or some other audiobook marketplace suddenly decides that they're just going to add that feature to books that are on their platforms automatically, which they certainly could very easily do, then I won't be sold on those platforms anymore. That's my choice, right? Everybody needs to make their own choice there, but I think that aesthetically, you want a human voice with all of its inflection and personality and imperfection and just sensitivity to read your audiobooks, especially, again, fiction. As long as we're talking about my personal sort of lines in the sand, I have used Stable Diffusion on my computer to brainstorm images. I will put one of those images that I created with the aid of Stable Diffusion in the show notes for this episode, episode 66. And look, it's as I said, it's imperfect, it's stylized, it breaks laws of physics and anatomy, these images that pop up. But it did get my brain going to think about the design of this animal. It's an animal that exists in my Shaper's world, story world. It did make me think about aspects of this particular animal that I had not thought about yet. So it was a good brainstorming creativity tool. I would not use the actual image that was generated. I mean, like, I wouldn't put it on a book cover, for example. It's just not good enough. It's just not right. There's something, it's the uncanny valley, right? It's something just not quite right. And that's how the case with a lot of these text-to-image generators. It's neat. It's often kind of moody, and it has a definite tone. But there's always something just not quite right about it. I saw, I think it was an article on Medium about a guy who had written and illustrated an entire children's book, and all the illustrations were created by one of these text-to-image AIs. And this person just got slammed because they were so happy and proud of what they had managed to cobble together. But, I mean, like... Again, AI image creators are not so good with hands. They're not so good with teeth. And you end up with these unintentionally monstrous things. And like I said, it's just not ready for prime time. Definitely not. Will it be someday? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And there are issues there, as I talked about. With ChatGPT, I'm going to keep playing with that. Because just like the text-to-image thing that I used that helped me brainstorm new ideas about my creative stuff, ChatGPT, I think, might be an interesting tool for helping suss things out. You know, it's a wall to bounce a ball off of. You know, it's paint to throw against the canvas and see if maybe it makes you think of something or helps you look at something. It's not any good for creating finished works of any merit. So I'm not afraid of it. And frankly, even as it improves, and it will improve over the next year, 2 years, constantly, it will improve these technologies. I'm still not concerned about it. And here's why. There's precedence for this kind of stuff. This fear that we're hearing from artists and writers about artificial intelligence replacing their craft, it's all happened before. The most obvious example I can think of is the player piano. So for the folks in my audience who may not be aware of this or may not be old enough to have known about this or even seen one in real life, a player piano is a piano with a mechanical device built into it that, rather like a giant music box, right? It has a paper scroll with holes punched in it. And based on the location of the holes, that, through a series of levers and whatnot, triggers which keys to press on the piano and which pedals to depress on the piano. And so you put the player piano roll, they called it, into your player piano and turn the crank or turn the button or whatever, and the roll would turn, and as it turned, the piano would play. Okay? Just like a music box. You know, if you ever look inside a music box, it's the same thing. There is a cylinder with knobs on it, little bumps on it, and a series of tines, each with a different tonal quality based on their length. And so the location of the bump on the roll causes a certain tine to go boing. And depending on the tine, that creates a musical note. That's how a music box works. It's the same principle with a player piano. But here's the problem. When player pianos came out early in the 20th century, the big industry for music was sheet music. You know, folios of sheet music, musical notation. Because most people, or many people, knew how to play piano. And so they would buy sheet music, take it home, set it up on their piano, and play it for the edification of themselves and their family and their friends. That's how folks enjoyed music. In the home. Before radio, right? Before Victrolas and other musical recording and playback devices were commonplace. People bought sheet music and played their own music. So when the player piano came around, the sheet music companies were like, no one's ever going to play piano again. They can have this machine play it for them. Oh no. Oh no. Well, obviously that didn't happen, right? It was the same thing with radio. When radio came around, why would people ever need to go and listen to live music again? They can simply turn on their radio box at home. They won't, you know, the music concerts will be doomed. So obviously, people still learn how to play music. And even now, in 2023, the best way for a musician to earn a living as a musician is to go somewhere and play in front of people. People want, and always will want, to experience other people creating art. So I'm not concerned with replacing the human creator. Not as audiobook narrators, not as visual artists, and certainly not as writers. Will AI be an instrument of human creativity? Absolutely. And honestly, I welcome it. Like I would welcome any tool that we use to create. Because here's the deal, folks. Technology is an extension of us. Tools are an extension of us. Tools allow us to be more and do more than we could otherwise. And all technology is a tool. All technology created by humans is, by extension, an instrument of humans. We are already using technology to create art, right? I'm speaking into a microphone that is plugged into a box that has a bunch of circuit boards in it and a wire that goes from that box into my computer, which is changing the vibration in the air that my vocal cords and lungs and tongue and teeth and lips are making, transforming those vibrations in the air into teensy, 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 teensy marks on a magnetic disc. Okay? Otherwise, I couldn't reach you. This podcast is a piece of technology that takes my human expression and amplifies it. AI is a piece of technology created by humans, using input created by humans, that amplifies and enhances what humans do. And sure, you can extrapolate and say, well, what about when AI starts creating AI? And what about when it's no longer dependent upon input that was originally created by humans? What about then? Well, we're not there yet. I don't know. But again, I suspect that the result will be as human as we are, only more so. And I'm fascinated by it all. I'm interested in it all. I don't love artificial intelligence any more than I love a hammer or this microphone that I'm talking into. It's a useful, interesting tool, but I'm not worried about it replacing me. Because it simply cannot do what I can do any more than any of you could do exactly what I can do, or that I could do exactly what you do. This gets back to the fundamentals of why we create and why we each should create, right? Nobody can tell the stories that you can tell in the way that you can tell them, because no one else is you. And even if you want to get really science fictional about it, and like I said, extrapolate out, even if an AI could somehow very, very accurately and convincingly mimic you, it could only do so accurately and convincingly up to the moment that it took in data about you. Everything after that point is something that is no longer you. It's an extrapolation. It's a development. It's a derivative work of you. So yeah, only you can make your art. Any facsimile is going to be just that. And there will always, this is a hill I'm going to stand on and plant my flag. There will always be a demand and a desire for creative works created by humans. So don't worry about artificial intelligence. Use it. See how it can help you create your stuff. Don't depend on it to create stuff for you, because that's going to show. And laws are going to be changed, and laws are going to be made that will probably not allow it to be copyrighted or trademarked anyway. So use it as a tool. Play with it. Embrace it. Don't worry, though. Hey, if you've enjoyed this or any other episode of Sonatotum, I've got three things that I would love for you to do for me to help show your support for the show. The first thing is, if you haven't already, Wherever it is that you get your podcasts, please subscribe for free to Sonatotum. Just click that subscribe button for Sonatotum wherever it is that you might have heard this episode, wherever it is you get your podcasts. Next, wherever it is that you get your podcasts, I hope you'll take just a moment to rate and review Sonatotum. Tell the world why you enjoy the show and why other people should listen to it and subscribe for free. And finally, if you'd like to go the extra mile, you have the will and the means, I hope you'll consider becoming a patron of Sonatotum and my other creative endeavors. For just $5 a month, not only will you be a member of the Multiversalists community of writers and readers and creators, you will receive all kinds of special access, perks, and exclusive content, not least of which is the uncut, unproduced edition of every episode of Sonatotum. Just go to mattselznick.com/b-a-patron or visit patreon.com/mattselznick and pledge just $5 a month to support the show through your patronage. That's it. If you can do one or two or all three of those things, you'll be really helping the show and helping me reach more people with the Sonatotum mission of making stuff, finding success, and staying healthy and sane in the process. Thanks. So have you played with any of the artificial intelligence platforms out there? Either ChatGPT talking to the invisible robot in the sky and seeing if it feels like a real conversation or if you get anything useful out of it, or one of the text to image AIs like Stable Diffusion or one of the others. I would love to hear about your experiences, what you think about it in terms of your creative process. As always, you know, you can leave a comment there in the show notes for episode 66 of Sonatotum. Just go to mattselznick.com. Click on the podcasts section and leave a comment there in episodes 66 show notes. You can also just email me at matt@mattselznick.com and let me know your thoughts. I will respond to every email and every comment. Or you can record a brief voice message, maybe on your phone, and just email that to me at matt@mattselznick.com. I will play that voicemail in a future episode and respond to it in that way. And that way we'll have a little time shifted conversation, you and I, back and forth. I think it's pretty neat. I think it's pretty interesting. I'm enjoying, I guess is the word, the discussion around these tools. I'm interested in seeing where it all goes. But again, I personally am not concerned that artistically or economically that AI or AI tools will replace actual human creators in any way. Okay, folks. My name is Matthew Wayne Selznick. Take care.